So here we are on the All Call Day podcast, but before we get started, I think it's worth mentioning that this is kind of a special episode.
This is a special one. We're doing something a little different with this one.
Yeah. See, we brought in Jeff Tumlin, who's a Texas ex and a communications expert. He just published a new book, Stop Talking, Start Communicating, which is a fascinating look at kind of how we communicate, how we can better communicate. Sounds like a broad topic, but I think this conversation was so fascinating and so relevant.
So relevant. I think we can safely call him a guru.
I think he's a guru, maybe a Sherpa.
I don't know if he's a Sherpa or not. But
he's not going to guide you up the mountain of better communication?
Yes, actually, if you put it that way, I think he will do that. So. I think from what I've read, I'm maybe not quite halfway through his book, and I'm feeling really good about it. It's proving to make an impact all over my life.
That's a good thing. I can tell. You've been communicating really well these last few days, Tim.
Thank you, Andrew. I will pass that feedback on to Jeff Tumlin.
Well, the thing about this conversation is it was so good, we didn't really want to cut it down. We wanted to run the whole conversation.
We think it'll be worth your time, actually.
So we're going to jump in, and this is unedited, the full conversation with communications guru, Jeff Tumlin.
Thanks for listening.
What are you thinking? How long you want to run? You just want to talk for a while?
We I don't know. We talk for 20 minutes, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. We usually take as long as the conversation goes, and then based on that, we find the best way to put it together, you know.
So, okay.
Well, I guess we're ready. I'll do a little tiny intro, and we'll get going.
How do I sound, John?
You sound magnificent.
Great. Okay. This is the All Call Day, the official publication of the Texas Exes. I'm Andrew Rausch, and I am joined, as always, by our Vice President of Communications and our All Call Day Editor-in-Chief, Tim Tolliver. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here. I love Jeff Tumlin.
Yeah, and he is our guest. Jeff is what we call a communications expert. He has a PhD from UT Austin, and he's out there spreading the gospel about how to better communicate. I thought this was fascinating because when we come to a university, we expect to be maybe prepared for the workforce, maybe prepared for life, and one of those crucial skills that I think people are always honing is communication. So it's awesome to have you with us, Jeff. Welcome.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks for the kind words, and same to you, Tim.
Now, Jeff, you have a new book out. It's called Stop Talking, Start Communicating. Let's start there. Where does this title stem from? What does that mean?
Well, it comes from the idea that in the last 20 years or so, we've been through a digital communication revolution. And what's happened in this revolution, for a lot of reasons, but hyper-communication. So we're communicating more, sending and receiving more messages than ever. But many of us, I think, have the uneasy feeling that we're sending and receiving more messages, but more doesn't mean better in the ways that we're connecting and reaching out to other people.
Can you give us an example of this kind of hyper-communication?
Yeah, sure. You wake up in the morning, and even if you make it to your inbox, it's overflowing. But you may not even make it to your inbox because the light is blinking on your smartphone. And so you're sitting in bed, and your day is starting on this notion that we're fielding messages. And so the goofy thing that's happened is that communication, which is, it's what got us out of the cave. It's what enabled us to live in increasingly larger groups in a civilized manner. So it's the glue of civilization, but communication has become something we do. It's on my list, and I check it off. But communication is actually the way I make my life. And so we've had a number of weird quirks in this digital communication revolution, one of them being communication has become more about something I need to do and less about the way that I actually make my life.
This is fascinating for a lot of reasons. I mean, I feel like maybe you were hiding in my apartment this morning watching me check my email and be annoyed by the blinking light on my smartphone. Now, we have this glut of communications. I'm communicating. This morning I got up. I read emails. I sent emails. I looked at my Twitter. I looked at my Facebook. I put things up on Twitter. I put things up on Facebook. I emailed you. You know, we did. How do I more genuinely communicate? If that's all the talk, How do we start communicating? What are the first steps?
So my concern is very simple. I'm concerned that what we've done in the last 20 years is had an emphasis on communication that's quick and expedient. And that's because we're doing that to manage the load. And so if we could just say that some communication is lower order, I can knock it out. Like, got your message, understood, read, wrote you back, boom, boom, boom. We're just knocking it out. But what's happening and what has happened in the last, for all of us in the last so many years, is increasingly we're spending more and more time sending quick and easy messages or lower order communication, and less time relatively in more kinds of higher order communication. And my concern is simply this. I'm spending all day playing the equivalent of communication checkers, and then when I need to reach into my toolkit for a chess move, something very difficult, like persuading somebody, resolving conflict, comforting a friend in real time, convincing someone to go out on a date with me, convincing a client that I provide the best service, something very difficult. I find that I've been playing too much checkers and my chess moves are extremely rusty. It would be nuts to suggest that all of the quick and expedient ways of communication we should give up. That's crazy. Who wants to do that? We needed to communicate quickly this morning. We needed to get those messages out and so on and so forth. And everything is fine in a certain balance. My concern is only that wherever I look, whether I'm looking at recent examples of squabbling in Washington, D.C., or in my own life with the kinds of communication challenges that I see with myself or with young people, I'm seeing an erosion of the more difficult communication skills. And in its place is the kind of quick and expedient messaging that we've all become very accustomed to doing.
Can I ask you, Jeff, about how this manifests in some industries? You know, where do you see this affecting, say, media or government? Can you take us through some of the what this has manifested?
Well, here's my concern. And so we're sitting here the morning after the most recent government impasse. And it's tempting because as Americans, we love to poke fun at our politicians and talk about how we're nothing like them. But my fear is that we're actually just like them. And that here's the thing. The tool of last resort is always I have to sit down and I have to hammer something out. Historically, and so what that is that's a higher order type of communication. So at the end of the day, we're going to raise the debt ceiling. Something like that's going to happen. And for that to happen, we have to sit down and do the hard work of putting aside certain differences, figuring out if we can have some kind of compromise, doing all kinds of face-saving maneuvers, and so on and so forth. Very difficult communication things. But if all along the way, in the weeks and months leading up to that, I'm doing the easy stuff, I'm scoring my points, I'm picking apart your side, I'm criticizing. It's the same thing. So it happens in D.C. like that. We have to, at the end of the day, we're going to have to figure this out. Some things have to be resolved. We have a big problem. You have a big problem in your marriage. That's going to be resolved one day. And we can get it. We can continue taking pot shots and we can criticize our spouse and so on and so forth. But at some point, there will be a resolution and we'll be sitting down. And the question is, by the time we're sitting down, have we inflicted so much damage that what we're sitting down to is actually going to be a kind of resolution that is a fragment of what it could have been, a damaged, wounded agreement that we put together?
What do you think, Jeff, are the forces that are moving this?
I think that there are two interrelated forces that are probably fueling this more than anything else. And so the first is the hypercommunication, the simple fact that there is just so much communicating that we're doing. And then the second piece is that in another weird quirk of this digital revolution, one of the things that's happened is it has become almost impossible to focus because of all of the distractions. And it's not just things are buzzing, there's a crawl on the screen. It's that on my phone right now, my smartphone, if I wanted, I could watch Dexter. Dexter, man. I mean, Dexter's awesome. The problem isn't with our devices that they're bad. The problem is that they couldn't be more awesome and captivating and compelling and engineered to catch my eye and draw me in. And so two things are happening. One is there's just so much communicating. We are a shortcutting species that loves communication. So we're the duct tape species, right? We do duct tape, we do post-it notes, you give me some bubble gum and a string, and I'll fix this car, right? So you give me too much communication, and by the way, I love communicating anyway, I'm going to look for a shortcut. And so that's the expediency. And then the second piece of that is that you give me all these devices that make it like I'm carrying around a casino in my pocket. It's crazier than walking around the French Quarter with all the shiny lights and so forth. And that's in my pocket. You give me that and I'm going to have to battle this drift. There's a fight in all of our lives for our attention. And that's the fight I get up and fight every day. How am I going to, because look, how many books do you have to read about people who have a successful life and do the things they want to accomplish and so on and so forth without realizing that it's this battle for focus and concentration that tends to set people apart and enable them to live the kinds of life that they want?
I want to work toward some of these solutions that are in the book, but I want to start with sort of talking about how you came to learn these things, how you came to be an expert, and you have an extensive resume, but one of the things that sticks out to me is that you originally went to West Point, and I believe you served in the Army, I think the infantry. Tell us a little bit about that experience, what you learned, how that shaped this perspective you bring to the book.
Okay, well, I appreciate you asking about that, and thanks for the kind words. Here's the thing. I went to West Point because of all of the choices that I had, that was the best place. And, you know, it's hard. You get accepted to West Point, it's very hard to say no. And so I went. And then, seriously, I picked the infantry, that's just the basic down in the dirt stuff. I picked that for a few different reasons. The first is the options, like tanks, they move too fast. Old Jeff, I got to keep it slow or else I get lost all the time. The helicopter stuff, that requires a certain spatial orientation that I just didn't have. I mean, I just don't have that. And so I needed to be in an area where there was something that I could do. And the thing about the infantry is it's just people. There's nothing else. There's no tanks. There's no artillery. It's just how do you interact with people? And so what happened to me and how I came to write a book about communication is that I was born and raised a Texas boy, and then I went from Houston schools, you know, Houston Public School and so forth, straight into West Point, and then from West Point straight into the infantry. And I had no choice but to learn how to interact with people for a number of reasons. A few of them being, look, you know, I do tend to get lost all the time. And by the way, I don't really like heights. And, you know, I sometimes wonder when it gets dark, is there a boogeyman? So, you know, you take a guy who doesn't like heights and he's kind of, you know, he's afraid of the dark and he gets lost. And then you put him as a platoon leader, send him to Ranger school, and now he's a platoon leader in the infantry. I got to learn how to work with people because I'm going to need their work, their collaboration, their help to be successful. And so I had trial by fire having to learn how to deal with people because I knew I needed them. I wasn't Super Ranger or anything like that. There's a competition called Best Ranger, and I've always joked, I'm Worst Ranger, man. And I need these people to help me or else I'll get lost and, you know, so on and so forth. And so I learned how to, I thought very deeply, and at West Point you learn a lot about leadership and thinking through decisions and so forth. And so I had that from West Point, and then I had to put it to use because I needed their help. And so I did that in the infantry for 5 years. And then I had the great good fortune on the Hazelwood exemption to come back and get free schooling at UT. And I landed in one of the best communication programs in the world we have here at UT. And a number of people were very kind to me here and helped me with the transition from civilian, from military life to civilian. And then they taught me to think more formally about people and how we're interacting. And then the book came naturally from there. You take a guy who learned something about leadership from West Point, and then he had to put it into service or else I was going to fall on my face as an infantry lieutenant. And then, and so I put it to use, learned it, thought through what I did, and then come and have a chance to, for many years, formally study what I put into use on the fly. And the result of all that is what's in the book. And it's, if anything, it's me trying to help people shortcut some of the trial and error as I have gone through and moved from one realm to another and tried to make that transition.
In the book, you have these sort of rules, we can call them, these sort of guidelines, and they're sort of counterintuitive, or at least they seem to be. One of the things you wrote is, don't be yourself. Explain that one for me.
Yeah, you know, I do coaching with executives, and what I'll sometimes hear is, I'll say, well, you know, why did you do that? And they'll say, well, you know, I was just being myself, and I felt like I'll tell them, in the immortal words of Dr. Phil, how's that working out for you? Because many times when I hear, I was just being myself, I needed to be authentic, that's a cover for bad behavior. And in any endeavor where we're trying to do something with someone else, bad interpersonal behavior is A, if not the major stumbling block. And so my encouragement to everyone is, don't be yourself. And by that I mean, don't just give yourself carte blanche to do whatever you want. Because the John Gardner, who many years ago wrote about leadership, and noted that it's a myth to think that the higher you go in any endeavor, the more you advance, that the more you can be yourself. In fact, the less you can be yourself, the less you get to say freely, because your megaphone is getting larger and larger and larger. And so what you need isn't more yelling training. You need to learn how to speak on a whisper mic.
Another fascinating counterintuitive idea you mention is, don't ask questions. That sounds like the opposite of everything I've ever been told.
Well, here's the thing about old questions is that in my work where I was doing, when I was doing communication research, one of the things that you'll do is you'll actually end up transcribing conversations. And so the first thing you realize when you transcribe a conversation is nobody talks in sentences. It's a hot mess, like the, you know, the sandwich from Jack in the Box, right? And so communication is imperfect and it's messy. That's learning point one. And then learning point two is, if you look at conversations, questions jack them up all the time. And what happens with questions is that they're a more difficult, and they're a very powerful communication tool because they stop a conversation. It's like a fork in the road. You give me a question, I have to do something with it. It takes us somewhere. So they're very powerful, but we never think about them. And so it's like a machine gun that we never learn how to shoot. And as a result, there's all kinds of errors in questions, leading questions, loaded questions, questions that are just criticisms in disguise. I mean, we could go on and on. But the short version is I tell people, don't ask questions, to get them to stop and think about how ill-formed many of their questions are. And then once you're thinking about that, once you plant the seed in your mind, and we should all do this, we're terrible questioners. Every single one of us, we're terrible questioners. That's a great starting point, because if you start from there, you'll start thinking more before you form them, and then that will enable you to use this very powerful tool more effectively. Obviously, I'm not against questions. They're very delightful and powerful, and they can help bring people together and so on and so forth. But that is not how most of them function. If you want to try a quick experiment, try this. Monitor the next five questions you hear in conversations and see what happens right after. If that doesn't convince you, it will. It'll convince you to pay more attention to questions.
Andrew, would you like to take a pause before you
yes,
ask your next question?
I have.
That's right. No pressure. I would like to say that these are actually good questions, but guess what? You're thinking about them.
Yes.
You've done some preparation.
It's my job, yeah.
And so these are 180 degrees different from the 10 million other questions we ask. We ask questions like this 0.1% of the time. It works because we thought through and we prepared and so forth. The other, 99.9, we're not thinking through them, but it's still the same powerful tool that we're inserting into our conversations.
Mm-hmm. Or it's a kind of circuitous communication. If I ask my girlfriend, hey, do you want to have Mexican for dinner tonight? I'm not asking her if she wants to have Mexican. I'm telling her I want to have Mexican.
That's right. That's right. A leading question.
The last one of these tenets that I'm really fascinated by, and I think the audience will want to understand better, don't pin the tail on the donkey. What does that mean?
Okay, so that comes from, I tell people all the time that a very powerful communication maneuver is to play dumb. And by that I mean, and that's where the don't pin the tail on the donkey. So people say goofy things all the time, and then there's that urge in many of us to make them eat their words or to hold their words. But that's wildly counterproductive. Instead, when we give people the space to self-correct from all kinds of things, not just goofy words, but they say something, maybe some kind of gossip that we really didn't want to hear, or they make an error and maybe render a criticism about us or whatever. When something happens and it's obviously, flagrantly counterproductive, instead of reacting, which sets off a trail of reaction, counterreaction, escalation, increasing damage, instead of that, do nothing. Play dumb. It didn't happen. And prepare to be surprised that many times it will ignite a very virtuous human behavior of self-correction. People will self-correct many times if we only give them the space. Play dumb provides the conversational space for someone to circle back and get a mulligan.
Jeff, before you got here, I was on Amazon, which your book is on Amazon, and I was looking at the reviews, and they're glowing. They're glowing reviews, and you should be congratulated on this book. One thing I saw three different reviewers say was, this book changed my life. It was life-altering, was exactly the words they said. What is your reaction to that?
Well, it's very humbling. That's very kind of people to say. And to me, it speaks to the pivotal nature of communication in our life. I wish I could say, oh, it's old Jeff, and he changed some lives and so forth. But probably what's happening is that my book is just a gentle reminder that good communication equals good relationships equals good life. And probably What's happened is that in reading my book and employing some of the tools, people have reasserted the centrality of communication in their life, and they're paying more attention to their words and the things that they're saying, and that that's having a positive impact. It's my belief that we're creating our life one conversation at a time in a hyper-communicating world where we're spending less time on more messages. My book is a gentle suggestion that maybe slowing down a little bit and paying attention as much as we can to every word and every interaction, that's probably the kind of advice that can help us decrease the gap between the life we want for ourselves and the life that we're living now.
It's fascinating. I think, you know, part of the value in a book like this is we're told all the time that communication is important in relationships, at work. It's always the key. When things don't work out, it's because you didn't communicate. That's sort of common wisdom. But very rarely do we get a chance to sit back and actually think about what that means. People say you need to communicate better, but what does that mean? I think that's the value in a book like this. I have a couple of lightning round questions.
Okay.
One, you do a lot of work with corporate executives, people like that. What's the most common mistake you see these high-powered individuals making?
Okay, yep, that's a great question. The most common mistake is that there's a confusion between what's immediate and what's important. And so what I mean by immediate versus important is the interaction right up in my face, it's immediate, but it may not necessarily be important. And if you take the kind of message and the kind of overload that we face and then multiply it by maybe two or three, that's a CEO in my experience. And they suffer from the same challenges that we do, which is I have to become much better, all of us, at prioritizing, because there's most of what happened in the digital revolution is beautiful. It's wonderful. Who wants to go back to the days before we had all these remarkable tools? But they have absolutely upended the idea of prioritization, and they do it in very insidious ways. So I think I feel this draw to my inbox, like my inbox is some marker of my life strategy, but it can't be, because my inbox is just a series of disjointed messages, and anything disjointed, that's antithetical to strategy. I can't unify something from a bunch of disjointed things. I have to pull away from that to create a unified type of life strategy, work strategy, and so forth. And so the most critical error that I see CEOs making is the same one that we're making, the same challenge of separating what's immediate from what's important and spending more of our time focusing on what's important, even if we have to let some of the immediate things go.
I have a question I'm stealing from another podcast, but I think it may shine some light, and if it doesn't, we won't include it. But I think it'd be interesting to know, what is that you can remember, what's the hardest you've ever laughed?
The hardest I've ever laughed, it was in my first month at West Point, and it was not very, you know, it wasn't tea with the queen. And my dad and a cousin of mine came down, and we had about 2 hours where we were released from the upperclassmen, and we could be, you know, spend some time together. And so I took a group of people who were all first years with me, maybe 10 of us, and my dad and my cousin had bought, I don't know, 15 pizzas. So just, you know, a bunch of pizza, and they set it down on the hood of a car, and we drove to a spot at West Point where, you know, the upperclassmen couldn't get to us. And so this is maybe 30 days into West Point, and it was the first time that, you know, I hadn't seen my family, obviously, since I went there. And the 10 of us, all of plebes who were sitting there, it was the first time that we could reflect back on what had happened to us. And we started talking about all of the, you know, all of the quirks of the upperclassmen who were giving us grief and so forth. And we just started to find for the first time ever how funny it all was. And we couldn't stop laughing. And I remember how cathartic that was to be sitting there 30 days into something pretty tough and realize that you could take a step back and look at it from a certain angle, and the whole thing was just comical.
Is there a lesson there about genuine or better communication?
I think that for me, the thing about human communication, it has two enormous things going for it, so to speak. The first is that it's primordial, and the second is that it's vital. And so by primordial and vital, what I mean is, by primordial, there's this urge inside of us to connect. And it will draw us into the next conversation and the next and the next. And it's vital in that communication is how we build up our life. And so what is so wonderful about people and about interactions is that there's something inside that draws us to people and to one interaction after another and after another. So even if there are errors and mistakes and quirks and confusion, which are also endemic to communication, we can actually make it through a lot of those. And so for all of my earlier concern about how we may be spending more of our time in the lower order communication and less in the higher, the good news is that we're going to have hundreds or thousands or millions of tries to improve, because there's this innate feeling inside of all of us. We want to connect. We want to reach out, and we want to have a type of meaningful interaction with other people.
Beautiful. The book is Stop Talking, Start Communicating. The author is Jeff Tumlin, a Texas ex and a communications expert, and a really great guy to talk to on a podcast.
Told you.
Thank you very, very much, Jeff.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks, Tim. It's a pleasure to be talking to all the Longhorns out there.